please the court. My name is Wayne Inge, and I represent David Bonner. This case is about Blockberger, and I want to talk briefly about the facts in Blockberger. He was charged in a five-count indictment of delivering morphine. The two counts of conviction that gave rise to the rule that's before the court was, I believe, counts 3 and 5, which on a specific day, at a specific time, to a specific person, he sold a quantity of morphine that was not in its original packaging. The other count of conviction was the same exact delivery, same date, same time, same location, same purchaser, but that the morphine was not delivered pursuant to a doctor's order. The United States Supreme Court found that, that was okay. Specifically, that facts are very, very similar, if not identical, to the factual arrangement situation that we have here. One discrete, non-divisible act that simultaneously violates two separate statutes.
Counsel, you're all quite familiar with Blockberger.
Excuse me?
We're all quite familiar with Blockberger, and we apply that test in the abstract, and we simply ask, is there one fact that supports the one statute that would not support a conviction under the other? Here, it appears that the malicious wounding statute has a specific intent requirement. Second-degree murder does not have a specific intent requirement. Would you please deal specifically with that?
Yes, Your Honor. I concede that the elements of the two offenses are different, and that the intent of each statute is different, although they are very similar. As far as different elements, I concede that, and I also concede that the application of Blockberger is in the abstract. Is not fact-specific. I spoke as to Blockberger initially was that because one of the issues that we have to decide is the legislature's intent.
So at this point, what it really comes down to is you're arguing policy rather than Blockberger.
Well, it's just that the two statutes that Blockberger violated were part of an omnibus criminal statute, unlike the situation we have here.
The situations are facially similar, but essentially you have to argue policy rather than arguing strict adherence to Blockberger.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, couple other cases that Blockberger has been applied is the American Tobacco case, which is cited by the Commonwealth in their brief, which, although the facts of those of the cases span several years, the United States Supreme Court found that Blockberger authorized convictions under conspiracy and restraint of trade and conspiracy to monopolize. Once again, the two statutes of conviction were part of an omnibus statute, the Sherman Antitrust Act, unlike the situation here. The other case relied upon by the Commonwealth in their brief is Albernez, in which that defendant was convicted of conspiracy to import marijuana into the United States and conspiracy to distribute marijuana within the United States. Once again, the Supreme Court decided that Blockberger permitted separate convictions and separate punishments, but in both cases, the statutes of conviction were part of an omnibus statute in which very easy to divine the legislative intent as to what they wanted to have happen. The other case, which I think is very important, which is cited by the Commonwealth, is Payne versus Commonwealth. in which that was a drunk driving case in which the defendant drove for some time, committed an accident, and then ultimately killed a person. The spree lasted, I don't know, 5 minutes, 2 minutes, but I mean it was spread over a period of time, ultimately leading to the death of the person that they were, that he was both convicted of aggravated involuntary manslaughter and felony murder. There you have a situation in which you have a specific statutory authorization that permits that. Likewise, you have situations in which a person can be convicted and separately punished for using a firearm in the commission of a felony. What we have here is that we have murder as a common law offense, and then we have aggravated malicious wounding as a statutory offense, in which there is no connection. It is, it's just the legislature only acted as to the aggravated malicious wounding, and they did so knowing about, you know, common law offenses in general. The most significant thing about all of this is that it basically results in any murder in which there's a wounding, that the person can both be charged, prosecuted, convicted, and sentenced for some degree of wounding and some degree of homicide, even if the person falls dead immediately. And of course, immediately is a squishy concept, but it's a common thing, you know. So-and-so died instantly. So-and-so was dead before they hit the floor. But the fact of the matter is that the body takes some period of time before there is a total absence of life, which the medical examiner, in a case like that, could spend some time testifying about the actual shutdown of the body system that lasted 41.3 seconds between the time he was shot in the heart and the time there was a complete absence of life.
Counsel, I
certainly agree that at the bottom of the slippery slope, every single second-degree murder charge could be accompanied by a malicious wounding charge. But they're not, as a practical matter. But in this particular instance, the sentence imposed by the judge, the combined sentence for the two charges he was convicted of, in fact, is within the statutory range for second-degree murder alone. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
Counsel, are you aware of any statute which is the opposite of the statute involved in Payne, which says if you're convicted of X, you cannot be convicted of Y?
I'm not, Your Honor.
I'm not in any other state cases.
Excuse me, Your Honor?
Any other state treatments of the issue?
I'm aware of them.
Pardon?
I'm aware.
You're not aware of Montoya versus, or New Mexico versus Montoya?
No, Your Honor.
Let me ask you a question, counsel. If you want us to reverse this case, how do you deal with the Blockberger argument? That you can't overrule it, obviously. It's a U.S. Supreme Court case. How do you accept it?
Well,
Or do you just disregard it?
It's just you find that because it is distinguished because in Blockberger, the two statutes of conviction were part of an omnibus criminal statute, in which is not the case here, and that is how it is distinguished. So the relief that I'm requesting can be granted without doing any violence whatsoever to Blockberger. I'm not asking you to do anything. It's just that Blockberger does not. Blockberger, to the extent that it is
I've never heard Blockberger limited to an omnibus crime situation, statute situation.
Well, it's just that's...
That's a fact, I understand.
Yeah, that's...
But that's not the way it's been applied, is it?
I was just trying to distinguish what I have here from Blockberger in a way that was meaningful for my client.
Okay.
And, well, that's what they did in New Mexico versus Montoya. You don't actually cite the case, but you make the same argument. In that case, the defendant shot at a motor vehicle, and unfortunately somebody died in the process, and he was charged with two crimes, shooting at a motor vehicle and manslaughter. And the traditional Blockberger test, obviously looking at elements, would not forbid that. but the Supreme Court of New Mexico said that that's not the end of the test. You have to look at the legislative intent to determine what they categorize as a substantive sameness test. And the question is, did the legislature intend that when there is a unitary act, that there would actually be two convictions based upon the unitary act? Now, that's basically what you're arguing, even though you haven't cited Montoya.
That is the argument that I'm making.
Perhaps the Commonwealth could respond to it.
If there aren't any other questions, I would like to reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
All right, thank you.
You want to start there?
Yes, Your Honor.
Let me quote from the court.
Let me introduce yourself.
Yeah, go right ahead. You're smiling at me, but go right ahead.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Victoria Johnson, representing the Commonwealth this morning.
Let me quote from it. If several statutes are not only usually violated together, but also seem designed to protect the same social interest, the inference becomes strong that the function of the multiple statutes is only to allow alternative means of prosecution, and a substantive sameness test is provided, and the court says where both convictions are premised on the unitary act, one of the convictions must be vacated. Now, he didn't cite that. That's exactly what he's saying. And the Supreme Court of New Mexico has embraced that test as being a part of the Blockberger analysis. You just don't just look at elements, but you once you find that the elements have disparate aspects, that you have an obligation under the Fifth Amendment, and the Blockberger concept to look as to whether or not there is substantial sameness that has come about because of a unitary act. That's what he's arguing.
Yes, Your Honor. I have not read that case because I did not look into New Mexico law in preparation for this argument. However, I think in the portion of the case that Your Honor read, there was something about whether the crimes protected the same social interest.
That is one of the reasons for the conclusion.
Well, I submit then to the court that these two crimes, aggravated malicious wounding and second-degree murder, do not protect the same social interest.
But I think the same social interest is to keep people from shooting other people.
Well, there is that
It just
interest.
Happens to be that he died in this case.
Well, however, there is the interest that the Commonwealth has, that the General Assembly certainly has recognized, in punishing those who kill their victims and punishing those who cause severe injury to their victims such that they are permanently disabled and suffer for a period of time before their death. And I submit that the General Assembly has manifested an intent that those two crimes be punished separately.
Where is the manifest intent? Where do we find that?
Well, Your Honor, I would take recourse to the Blockberger test if I'm allowed.
Well, we don't get to Blockberger. Okay. We get to Blockberger because we can't determine the legislative intent. Isn't that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. Well, I was responding to Justice Fleming.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. You were still answering his question.
I was responding to the New Mexico case.
His argument. I mean, I'm just telling you there's one state in the United States that has actually accepted that argument and has stated that the real reason for this is to provide alternative means of prosecution, but not to provide separate convictions because of a unitary act. And that's his argument.
And as the law is now in the Commonwealth, the Blockberger test is currently the law. And in similar cases, this court
has
applied
the Blockberger
test. Well,
I guess the question is, if you're going to deal with twice being placed in jeopardy, it's not just a question of the law of the Commonwealth.
Well, yes, Your Honor.
It's the United States constitutional
provision. Right. And the United States Supreme Court has given us the Blockberger test.
They have. And they have not given us the Montoya test. That is a fact.
Yes, Your Honor.
You're absolutely right about that. But I am suggesting to you that one, or actually more than one, Richardson versus Indiana, has also accepted that test. There's two cases I can find that actually embrace his argument under a Fifth Amendment double jeopardy test or analysis.
Yes, Your Honor. And I would stick to my answer that as far as the competing social interests here, our General Assembly has enacted two statutes, one of which punishes a severe wounding that leads to a permanent disability, and another one that punishes murder. And I think that those are two separate interests that
would
that
you can concede that it's a unitary act?
Yes, I absolutely concede it is a unitary act. There is a single stab wound.
Are you aware of any statute on the books that says if you punish someone for X, you cannot punish them for Y? I'm not. I thought there was in the back of my head, but I can't find it.
I'm aware of Code Section 18.2.23.1, which bars conviction for conspiracy after a defendant has been tried and convicted for the substantive offense.
That's a subsequent conviction.
Yes, that's a subsequent
conviction, not a punishment. Because it seems to me our first analysis seems to be if we can define the legislative intent.
Yes, Your Honor.
And so we certainly have the statute involved in Payne, where the legislature has clearly said this provision shall not preclude prosecution under any other homicide statute.
Yes.
So when they want to say it doesn't preclude, we have statutes where they say it. So in this case, why wouldn't we apply the body of law that says when the legislature wants to say something, they say it, and if they don't say it, then we don't read it there?
Well, I have at least two answers to your question, Your Honor. First, in Payne, while this court acknowledged that there was statutory language in the manslaughter statute, this court acknowledged it and then went ahead and applied the Blockberger test.
Yeah.
And in many other cases where there has not been explicit statutory language, this court has applied the Blockberger test. One case that is very similar to this case is the Blythe case. In Blythe, this court concluded that unlawful wounding and the commission of a felony and involuntary manslaughter were could be cumulatively punished. And it's very similar, and in that case, one is a statutory crime and one is a common law crime. Pardon me, I think I misspoke. Blythe was voluntary manslaughter. I may have said involuntary. It's voluntary manslaughter.
Mm-hmm.
But you'd concede you can't do it successively. You can't do them one right after the other. Even your position is that you have to do it at the same time. For example, in this case, you couldn't charge this man with murder and have a complete trial and then charge him with malicious wounding thereafter. Clearly, the double jeopardy clause prohibits that. It does.
Okay.
Why does it?
I hadn't thought about...
The answer to that is because it's a unitary act. That's exactly why. It's the same act. And you can't put him twice in jeopardy successively with the same act. Now, there's been cases that have suggested if you're going to do it, you have to do it at the same time. I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
His argument, and at least two states, have said there's no difference between a successive prosecution and a simultaneous prosecution if it involves a unitary act. And so it's not exactly Blockberger, but it is an interpretation of Blockberger that deals with the same legal principle that does not allow the Commonwealth to prosecute them successively. The same principle.
And here, Your Honor, there certainly was no successive prosecution. And again...
Well, but you're missing my point.
Yes, I
if
am.
That you, if you can't do it successively because it violates the double jeopardy clause, but why is that? And the answer is because it's a unitary act, and he's already been placed in jeopardy for it. why wouldn't that same principle apply within a case when the Commonwealth or any state prosecution has used multiple possibilities of prosecution for a unitary act? Why isn't New Mexico and Indiana correct that you don't just look at the, if that's just the first step in Blockburger, what are the elements? And if there's one that's different, then you go to the next step. Did our legislature intend for there to be an alternative means of prosecution for a unitary act? Or did they intend that there be a trial that allows one conviction for a unitary act? You can't get two successively. Why should you be allowed to have two in one trial? That's the point, and that's his argument.
Your Honor, having not read the cases from New Mexico and Indiana, I don't believe that I can adequately address them. I'm happy to submit a supplemental brief to the court if the court would like me to do that.
Well, I mean, you know, it's not your fault. You didn't cite them. I mean, I don't fault you for that. I mean, you respond to what the appellant cites. He didn't cite any of those cases. So please don't think I'm, you know, chastising you for it, because I'm not.
Oh.
But he does make the argument. He just doesn't have the citations to support.
Yes, Your Honor. And with that said, Your Honor, I would still stick to the argument that I raised in my brief, which is that the first step in the cases that this court has, relying on this court's precedent, relying on Blythe and relying on Payne and relying on the United States Supreme Court cases, the first step in the double jeopardy analysis in this kind of situation is to look at the plain language of the statute and to see if the legislative intent is discernible. If it is not, then the Blockburger test is applied. And
the Blockburger test is, in essence, when you've got this sort of situation, the Blockburger test is the default principle where you examine the elements and you first ascertain whether there's a legislative intent that to crimes that be violated.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I didn't quite catch the
Blockburger test is the default, and you only go to that if you can't discern the legislative intent as to whether it's to be two separate crimes.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's your position.
Yes, Your Honor, that is correct.
Okay.
And I base that on the United States Supreme Court decision in Dixon that stated that is the correct test to use.
So in the Andrews case, which the Court of Appeals talked about some, because I think that appellant had relied on that in the Court of Appeals, I don't think he really did here, where we, in the capital murder statute, we said that it wasn't the General Assembly's intent for those two subsections, and I've forgotten what they were. One was multiple murders in 3 years and at the same time or something, that wasn't the legislative intent that a single transaction, a single event would at the same time violate both of those statutes. And we didn't really do a true Blockburger analysis there, did we?
No, Your Honor.
Because we stopped at the legislative intent.
That's correct, because the legislative intent in Andrews was plain. For this case to be like Andrews, though, Mr. Bomber would have had to be convicted of, you know, malicious wounding by shooting, cutting, stabbing, etc. And plainly, that would be a problem. In Andrews, though, it was pretty plain that the General Assembly didn't intend for a defendant to be prosecuted for each factual predicate under the capital murder statute. That was my understanding.
If there was only one murder, or it was more than one murder, but it was at one point in time, it was a unitary act.
Yes, Your Honor. However, this is a different situation. These are two separate statutes that one act, one criminal act, violated, much like in Payne, where the Kelly Payne's act of driving violated two statutes when she hit and killed a pedestrian. Actually, her act of hitting and killing the pedestrian violated the two statutes.
Let me give you another example of where the same principle was taken. You can't be convicted of one offense and the lesser included offense of that offense.
Yes, Your Honor.
Even if the elements are different. I mean, the elements are different in a lesser included offense, by definition.
Right.
You can't be convicted of both of them.
Yes.
Why? Because it's a unitary act. That's exactly why. even where the elements are different. You can't do that. Now, all his argument is, and the argument accepted by at least two courts is that principle equally applies, even under, like, for example, you have two statutes, assault and battery, malicious wounding. You can't be found guilty in a single act for both assault and battery and malicious wounding. Why? Because it's a unitary act. That's why. So even though the elements are different, all he's arguing and all New Mexico and Indiana have now embraced is that Blockberger isn't the end of the analysis.
And in response to the lesser included issue, aggravated malicious wounding and murder are not lesser included offenses, one of the other, Your Honor. And there's never been any contention in this case that they were.
No, we're talking about the same principle. You're exactly right in what you just said. It's the principle that they want to graft into this circumstances because they can't imagine why it wouldn't apply. Because you get this, what at least seems to be viscerally to be a ridiculous outcome. Somebody gets shot and they die immediately. Well, what's immediately? It's got to be a couple of seconds, right? Somebody gets shot and they die 10 months later. I don't know of any prosecutor that brings both murder and malicious wounding charges to somebody who dies within seconds.
Mm-hmm.
It's just it's not done. And in this case, he dies sometime later, and now it is being done. The unitary act concept requires you to go beyond the elements of the offense in Blockberger to determine whether or not there's a legislative intent to be convicted of two offenses on a single unitary act. And we don't do it if it's successive, and we don't do it if it's a lesser included offense. So why should we allow it here? That's the argument he makes, even without the citation to these cases.
And I rest on my argument that I raised in my brief and ask the court to affirm. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Rebuttal?
If the court has any other questions, I'll be more than happy to answer them. Otherwise, I will waive the balance of my time.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Court will take a short recess.
All right.